Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's go.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Paul and producer Dave, your boy PD. And today we're going to be talking Disney Plus's show, The Mandalorian. This is going to be season 3, episode 8, season 3 finale, chapter 24, entitled The Return. And before we dive into it, I do want to reroute you over to BingetownTV.com. That has our full catalog of all the shows that we've covered. We're pushing like 400 episodes at this point. We have like over 30 shows, and the website is new. It looks great. Jimmy spent a lot of time on it. So go on over to BingetownTV.com and support the podcast, please and thank you. All right. Season 3 finale. Right now on IMDb, it is at an 8.5, which isn't even the highest rated of the season. But 8.5 is nothing bad. It's pretty good. And I think my first watch through, I was really satisfied because there was a lot of awesome action scenes, Bo-Katan leading the charge with the Darksaber. But it felt like easy almost, and it felt very fast, and it was a relatively short episode. So the longer I think about it, almost the more I'm like, you know what? They could have done a little bit more with it. What are you guys thinking?
I absolutely loved this finale episode.
There you go.
I agree. I will agree. It did feel kind of fast. I was shocked to see it release. I think it was at 38 minutes, maybe was the total airtime of the episode. So I was a little shocked to see that. But I really did. I really did think this was a phenomenal episode. I've been saying a lot of these episodes have been like, you know, top three or top five. I wouldn't put it quite there, but I think it was a very solid episode. Agreed. Things felt maybe a little fast, but I did feel at least content with everything overall as of the picture and where we're heading into season 4, or at least where I think we're heading in season 4.
Yeah, I think the reason it went fast is because there was so many fights on so many different fronts going on. You know, looking back at it, there was kind of three different fights going on the entire episode. You know, Axe Wolves and the fleet up there, Bo-Katan and her Mandalorians, you know, running to safety and then running back to fight, and then Din. So in a way, it did go really fast, but I really did enjoy it. I think on the rewatch, I will say there was almost something to be desired, B-Toms, and I don't think it was anything to do with this season. I think it was how there was almost a lack of setup for the next season. But, you know, this whole season three, you know, not the finale, but all the episodes before were really just world building. So that was more the setup than, you know, leaving a crazy cliffhanger on the finale. That being said, you know, I loved it. You know, everybody had their own moments to shine, and just we'll talk about it more. But yeah, I fucking loved this action scene.
I will add too that I still think that this was probably by far my favorite Mandalorian season so far. And like, not to say that the other seasons have been bad. I just, something about this season just hit me in every way. Like every episode really did feel like a treat. Like we didn't really get much of the side journeys as much as we have in the past season. So as a whole, even though this was a little bit shorter, I believe being only 8 episodes versus like maybe sometimes I think seasons have been 10 sometimes, but
I think they're always 8.
Are they? Okay.
Because this is episode 24, so that would make sense.
Duh, that makes sense mathematically.
Rather.
But still, I think this was my favorite season. This was phenomenal.
It's interesting you say that, because based on how I'm reading the community, that would be a hot take.
Really?
And I would probably agree with the community that season three has been a down season. And there's not much I can say. I've been reading The Ringer's article, and this one sentence was, its twist was its lack of twists. I feel like it was like very expected, like...
Yeah,
it was a swing and a miss. Last episode, I was like, guys, I think Din could die next episode, which was way too extreme. That was a crazy
We love it, though. We love it.
But at the very least, like, maybe he would have gotten interrogated, like...
A little bit harsher than just, like, being dragged and, like, escaping.
Yeah, he escaped within the first 2 minutes of the episode while he was bound and took out three Beskar-clad stormtroopers. I was like, okay, so...
Two shows in a row. Pedro Pascal does that. I don't want to give away too many spoilers if you didn't watch The Last of Us. But again, dude, just get more than two people to escort your prisoner and you'll be good. Like, yeah. No wonder Darth Vader fucking carbon froze Han Solo, because he was like, dude, I'm not going to risk just, you know, chaperoning him all the way there. I'm going to freeze
his ass.
Yeah, I'll just watch him do it myself. I'll alter the agreement all I want and pray I don't alter it farther. So... I agree that it was kind of easy for Din to escape. And, you know, Grogu does kind of come in at the end. We'll get to it. But I agree that it was almost a little too simple for, you know, one of the big bads, Moff Gideon, who is so smart.
One of the big twists of the season was that Moff Gideon was revealed to have escaped, which, like, really didn't feel like a big reveal because we knew the caliber of person Moff Gideon was. So they, like, had made it to be like this big mystery when in reality it just had felt natural.
It was inevitable. That was like the big twist. It wasn't like having it confirmed was a cool moment.
I mean, coming off the Luke Skywalker reveal, I mean, that is definitely hard to follow up with. From season two. But I think, as for character growth wise, for Grogu, for Din, I think it was a phenomenal season. But I can see why my take would be hot and why the community would also agree that it was kind of like a simple season on face. But I'm ready to go.
Let's do it. And before we do get into it, I want to take this moment to apologize. This is going to be released a little bit late. We've said it before, our work schedules have been a little bit hectic recently, and the podcast production has suffered as a result.
And we appreciate you guys.
We tend to procrastinate when we know it's a finale, so we don't have to get it out before next week's episode. So a little bit of both there, but hopefully it is worth the wait, and we apologize for the delay. But yeah, we kind of touched on Din's first scene here, where he dismantles the two Beskar-clad stormtroopers. I think there were three, honestly, and then IG-12/Grogu bails him out, but then Bo-Katan has the opening scene when she's talking to Axe, who loses contact in the atmosphere. Honestly, this episode was just like a thrill ride. It was like very hard to take notes because it's a lot of like moving parts from, I guess, Paul, you kind of said that earlier, like there's a lot of different stuff going on.
Yeah, it's kind of like a fight on three different fronts. You know, Axwell's in the fleet. It doesn't have a whole lot going on, but still, you know, everything's so bang, bang. You know, as you're watching it, you're like, wait, is Axe going to come in at the end and like kind of save everybody? I kind of forget what's going on. Dude. So
Axe played a very pivotal role in this. One of the things, like another lack of twist, people were thinking Axe might have been a spy, like an inside man betraying the Mandalorians.
I was on that ride for a little bit because he was up in the atmosphere. I didn't like fully trust the guy yet.
He had been causing
issues, and like the transponders going out when he's in the sky. So I'm like, this might just all be part of the plan. And he comes in and like he's telling the other Mandalorian, like, you got to get everyone out of here. And it looks like he's not even believing Axe Wolves. So I'm like, dude, Axe is just going to betray everybody and just like save himself and just go off into the distance.
Genuinely thought he was going to take the... It's not the Imperial Cruiser. What is it?
Light Cruiser, name it, right?
I genuinely thought when he took control, he was going to bring it back to Moff and be like, hey, I brought you your ship back. Let me work for you. But he came around, and I think Paz's death really affected him the episode before.
Yeah, definitely. And the one thing I will say about IG-11 Grogu or IG-12 Grogu coming to save Mando is when he comes in. He's just like, no. I will never get over it.
And this whole fight, I will say the Stormtrooper Beskar, and when the Mandos fight them, the clink of their armors when they throw a punch, very satisfying.
Agreed.
And
they look so good.
They do. Like we said, there's going to be a million of them at Comic-Con now. Yeah. And
I will say all the scenes with Axe like flying through the atmosphere look fantastic too. Like
Definitely. And when Din, he just got done getting flamethrowered, Grogu comes in and saves him. So Grogu hits him with a little cooldown, like mist spray.
Yeah.
And, and he's like, dude, I'm fine. Help me.
It was so funny. I love how they made Grogu such a comedic character without even being able to just like speak, really.
Two words. Like,
yeah, yes
just,
and no.
Just being able to understand him saying yes and no is so much better to be able to communicate and understand where he's coming from.
He was adorable as always this episode. I can't get enough.
Well, he does lose the suit going forward, so it was short-lived, but I'm getting ahead of myself there. Also, Din and Grogu have a nice moment where he's like, you need to be brave. If we don't take out Moff Gideon, then this will never end, which is true. I think they knew they had to deal with the threat now and finish it once and for all. Are you with me? And this is kind of like a promotion for Grogu. Usually, he's like on the sidelines in daycare with Lizzo or Pelimoto or someone else. Now he's like, okay, buddy, you've like gotten me out of some sticky situations enough. You've earned this right to like be with me during the battle.
And Grogu was willing to accept the challenge. To me, at least, even though he doesn't speak, like reading his body language and his cooing, he was ready for it. You know, he had always wanted to be a part of these missions. And, you know, Father Din, Daddy Din wouldn't let him. And now he's rising to the occasion and he crushes it, man. Happy for our boy.
And he needed him, too. Yeah, I think Din knew that as well. He's like, hey, I'm gonna need your assistance here. I'm not gonna be able to do this. So let's fucking go get this guy. And oh my god, R4. Can we talk about
R5?
R5.
Oh my god, I'm the worst. R5D5?
Yeah, R5D5.
So cool, man. We talked about it before, but the fact that they are able to portray a personality on a droid is so funny, man. His little worried beeps and stuff as he's going and the little mouse droids.
Yeah, R5 stepped up to the plate, man. Another one that was shitting its droid pants a little bit ago and now is being forced to enter the lair of the enemy and, you know, do some stealth reconnaissance. But R5 stepped to the plate. I think our boy Daddy Din, just the family's growing, baby. The family's growing.
I loved the scene, like just how it looked, him jetpacking down, descending. But actually, it was just Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. I watched Blue Harvest, and those little rat droids have the funniest scene where they're like, oh, man, I was thinking about Tyra Banks or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So funny. That whole episode is... Such good fan service, Blue Harvest from Family Guy.
It's unbelievable. The little scene transitions that they bring from the original trilogy to the show. Go back and watch it if you guys haven't seen it in a while, because if you're a real Star Wars fan, you will appreciate it more than the average Family Guy fan.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So while this is going on, Bo-Katan and the other Mandalorians are making their way out of the mines, I guess, and then they jetpack away. The native Mandalorians know a place which winds up being that cave with kind of the thriving flowers and stuff.
That was really cool how they say, you know, there's enemies above, there's enemies below, so we were able to find this haven. But I was like, oh, and you were able to find a garden too, or you were able to find foliage. And he was like, no, we planted this garden, like we farmed and we made it livable here. So it's really cool, really weird to see green plants on Mandalore, if I'm honest. But I think it kind of really gave Bo-Katan like a spark of hope, something, a little extra nudge to fight for, to see that your home really can be saved.
Wally vibes, you know?
Yeah.
And people were complaining like, oh, why didn't you kind of give this dialogue a little bit more about, I don't know, just exploring this part of Mandalore more? And I feel like they're just kind of presenting these topics to be explored maybe in a later season, or maybe Bo-Katan gets her own show. Like, I feel like they're going to be able to deep dive what's going on Mandalore during the rebuild in a later time. That didn't really have to be dissected this episode, but it was definitely a cool moment.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I don't think there was any need for them, especially now when we're so focused on the future of Mandalore rather than its past. Like, we already understand that Mandalore, you know, it was completely unlivable, uninhabitable. So we don't really need to dive too much more into that when we want to focus more on the future. They can save that for another opportunity.
Yeah. So moving through, Axe is informing the command center up in the fleet. Just sent all available reinforcements to the ground. We want to have the fight down there because we'll lose a battle in the sky. All like remain as a decoy. This dude wound up being like the most loyal person of all. This is an awesome shot of him just in the command chair, like all the TIE fighters just going down with the ship. This whole time, I was just thinking Mandalorians are a cheat code. Like, that shit was going down. If it was a regular Empire officer, he would have just died. He just put on the helmet, jetpacked out the window, and he was like, fine. Axe Wolves was pretty cool this episode. That's all I want to say, guys.
Yeah. Paul, I think you're absolutely right that Paz's death really did hit him. Like, I'm thinking of him and Paz fighting on the ship, from him and Paz now being, you know, having to work together and try and like retake back Mandalore. I really think that through Paz, through his experiences with Bo-Katan, like he found his home, and it was so satisfying knowing that he wasn't going to betray us, because I'm sure for some people it was probably very obvious that he was actually going to fulfill the mission. It wasn't so obvious to me, and seeing him come up clutch in the way that he did, just don the helmet, like you said, Paul, it was just so badass. And he was the pride of, he was the MVP. If this was our Yellow Jackets coverage, he would be the MVP of this episode, you know?
He would get one MVP, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. I guess there were a few MVPs.
A lot of people did a lot of good things this
episode. Grogu yeah. could have been MVP, yeah.
Like, I still thought that his number one priority was going to be money, because he was that mercenary, and they made it a point. But so I was expecting, you know, maybe Moff to hop on his comms and be like, hey, I'll give you like a million credits to fuck off and not join this fight or whatever. But man, he was loyal as hell. Exactly what you're saying. Going down with the ship all the way to the last second. That was hysterical. Well, we'll get to it. But at the end, he's like, I'm coming in hot. Get the fuck out of there. I'm like, dude, a little bit more warning. I know you couldn't, but Christ. But we talked about how many cool scenes there were. And this might be my favorite scene of Mando going through the ray shields and R4 dropping them slowly one by one. I mean, this I genuinely think this might be more hype and fun to watch and exciting than the Moff Gideon Din fight. But I mean, R4 stepping it up. Maybe that's why the little
R5 put some respect on it.
I can't. I know. I was just saying how good he is, and I don't even know his name.
No, but I'm right there with you. This, again, I think you said it in the last episode, but these barrier shields taking you back to the Phantom Menace. I mean, it's exactly what I was feeling through this. It was so cool. Mando just having to one by one each room. Well, I guess he was 1v2ing each room, but it was just cool how they separated it so that he wasn't having to take on all 10 of them at once, because this was way more realistic to have R5 break him down one at a time rather than just all 10 of them show up at once and kick his ass.
He's just going in barehanded, and he's just picking up their weapons.
Yeah, just picking up the weapons that he could get. Yeah, it's so cool seeing how great of a weapons master he is, just from being like using a blaster to just anything of the Star Wars weapons and gadgetry that he finds. He's just a master with automatically.
I think some people felt a little cheated that like he didn't have a weapon, and he was just once again pretty easily able to take out.
I think these
Beskar stormtroopers were leveled down during altercations with Mando specifically. I don't know why I'm choosing to complain about it so much this episode, because this is like quintessential Star Wars logic.
I personally don't have a problem with it, I guess, because for me, as someone who's probably as the most casual of kind of the Star Wars watcher, it's just, it felt realistic. I mean, yes, he didn't have a weapon. Yes, they have Beskar armor, the stormtroopers, but at the end of the day, they're stormtroopers. We've seen people take down thousands of them. Who cares if they get an armor upgrade? Mando is a warrior, like a trained warrior from being a kid, where these guys might not have that experience. And again, it was 1v2 Whereas if it was a 1v10 and he came out alive, then I would be like, okay, he got off scot-free. But because it was, they separated it into be little, these smaller groups of combat, I personally could buy it. I didn't feel too cheated with it.
Yeah, I'm on Dave's side here, just because even the stormtroopers were trying to say, like, hey, drop the shield so we can go in and fight him. But R5 was, you know, making it impossible for them to do that. And what Dave was saying, you know, Mando is a savage. Like, looking back at that scene on the beach where they had all of the Mandalorians were training, even the kids, like, that's the shit they do on the daily since, you know, they can don the creed and wear the helmet. So, you know, these stormtroopers are almost like university preppy kids who just
never been in the streets before. They've never been in a street fight.
That's very true. Mando is kind of that dude. And honestly, the first initial bull rush where he just like slams the guy into the laser shield, this is a cool fight. I think I woke up and I chose to complain today. It's really what it was. I read some articles where people said some nasty things and I was like, you know what?
We're here to bring you back down to our side. We're here to bring you back down.
I did hear a lot though how people weren't really enjoying this season, especially the one with Lizzo and Jack Black, and they're comparing that episode to the season before with Bill Burr and why they were so different. But I was like, looking at it, I'm like, I mean, you can't have the same episode, you know, every season. It's just going to be recycling. And I thought that episode was amazing with the world building aspect. And this entire season, Brian, you were pointing it out specifically, the whole season was, hey, the Empire had the best of the best gear, and it shows with these Beskar armor and with Moff Gideon's suit and how it's just unbelievably OP. So I really enjoyed this season, even though people were saying, you know, it wasn't exactly their favorite. Sorry about that. I just need to clear that up because I was kind of getting that vibe from the community, and I was like, I don't necessarily agree, but I can see where you guys are coming
from. I've seen more complaints than I have good things about the season, definitely on my end as well, which is upsetting because I've just enjoyed it. I've loved it. I truly have. So sucks if you didn't.
I'm just trying to think now how I would rank these seasons. I do feel like this finale,
it's either two or three. It's got to be two.
Really
or three.
Pack a punch. Like, let me ask you this. What is, in your opinion, the most iconic thing that happened this episode? Something that'll stick with you. Like, oh my gosh, that season three finale. Remember when? Like, what would be that moment?
I think Mando running
would touch
the
Luke Skywalker, but yeah, go ahead.
No, I totally agree. And I think they're a victim of their own success in that sense. I think season two, they're like, oh my God, season two finale. That was one of the most historic moments in all of Star Wars. Now people are, you know, they're not expecting something as hype, but they want something that got them those goosebumps that they were feeling back then. And, you know, I think it was a little bit hard to do with the story that they were telling here. I think the end of season two got you unbelievably excited for season three. And this finale, it just kind of like didn't, it's just like, yay, happy ending.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I agree. I just think that last season's ending was just so picture perfect in everyone's mind that it's hard to really do anything and follow that up with like as good of a season finale. I think Grogu, you know, the force over the fire will be an iconic shot for me. I think, like Paul said, I think even Mandalorian's Din Djarin's fight against these guys in the force shields was more iconic than it was than him versus Moff Gideon. I agree with that too. But yeah, it's all subjective, you know. Mm-hmm. It's all in the eyes of the viewer. But I liked it a lot.
Well, one of the iconic moments for me is kind of the next scene in our run through here is revealing Moff Gideon's master plan. Confirmed, he has been cloning himself. The Hall of Gideons in the back to tanks or whatever. That was a cool moment.
That was cool. I like that. Yeah, that was
the one opens its eyes at Grogu. It was cool, but this almost seemed like an afterthought. This was the culmination of like why Moff Gideon was such a bad. You always knew he was cooking something up with the cloning, and then kind of in a 45 second sequence. Whoa, all 10 of them are lined up. Let's just hit the kill button and they're done.
Yeah.
And maybe they're leaving it open ended. Maybe he has tanks in another planet or something. This was just one.
It's facility, like Rick and Morty, man. It's like Rick and Morty. It's he's like Rick and he has all the vats of everywhere. And it's what is the Project Phoenix?
Yeah, Project Phoenix. Yeah, I agree, Brian, that this was almost like an afterthought. Like their way of solving it was hitting a button, and it's like, all right, this really, I totally agree, this was Moff's big thing, right? This is all his master plan, what he was leading to, and the fact that he didn't even get to utilize it at all, you know, kind of stung a little bit. He does have a phenomenal line later when he's talking to Din, and he was like, those were my children and you smothered them before they could draw breath. I was like,
oh yeah,
the way he said smother and the fact that he even uses that word, it's like maybe he did care a little bit. He was showing some emotion. But I agree, Brian. I think that was the potential, what could have been, you know, that they see Moff in the suit, they kill him, and then all of a sudden like two other Moffs come down. That would have been nuts. Yeah.
That would have been nuts. Why didn't they do that?
Yeah, they should have at least. I feel like in these shows, when they hype up like a villain or some evil plot, like the plot at least gets executed to some degree and they actually have to stop it. Like it would have been cool to at least get a couple Moffs in action.
It wasn't bad. It was just very unexpected how expected and neat and tidy everything was for everybody. You know, like Mando gets out of his reins. He immediately stumbles upon all of the clones, boops them out of existence. And like,
yeah, I get that.
Yeah, we'll continue with it. It's not bad. It's just like an 8, not a 10, you know, and there's nothing wrong with an 8. I just like I demand perfection.
I totally see where you're coming from, though.
Okay, yeah, so we catch up with them kind of in the cave. They're going over how the plants are growing. We already talked about that. And then another awesome scene where the armorer gets on the comms and says, Lady Kreese, your reinforcements have arrived. And I'm like, ooh, okay. That kind of got my ears perked up. I was like, okay, the armorer is about to scrap.
She was fucking amazing. I fucking loved her. I thought the hammer and whatever else was a little cheesy at first. Definitely, I think Paul maybe had mentioned that a couple episodes ago.
The armor, man, that's our weapon of choice.
But like something about it in the skies was so much more badass. It's just seeing her fucking flying around and just she was like dancing. It was so perfect. I loved it.
She uses those tools more than anything. She knows those fit in her hand the best. So that's what she wants to fight with. And you're totally right. Just the CGI made me stand up with excitement. The way that she just like had them behind her head cocked and ready to go flying towards somebody like a kickoff, just both special teams full force and then fucking bams overhead swing. It was awesome. And Bo-Katan whipping out the Darksaber, pointing it. We didn't get her riding the Mythosaur with the holding the Darksaber leading the charge, but this was pretty badass.
I think
of Bo-Katan, I'm going to think of her holding the Darksaber charging right here.
That was another thing that they didn't really cash in on is the Mythosaur couldn't even be bothered to get out of the water.
Yeah.
He just kind of gurgled underwater without any sort of reveal.
I will say I was definitely waiting for a Mythosaur to pop up somewhere. I was definitely that will be one disappointment for me. Absolutely. They did show him at the end, which is cool. Hopefully we get more of them in season 4, but this was easy cash money for them to just at least show us a little bit of the power for season 4.
But going back to what Paul was saying, absolutely, the mid-air combat looked just tremendous. That was definitely satisfying for what I was hoping for. And maybe if I want to talk about what's the most iconic moment, it might be her leading the charge with that Darksaber.
Yeah, it's so sick. I rewatched the scene at least a couple times just because I was just in such disbelief of how clean everything looked. It was so well choreographed. I couldn't get enough of this scene.
All right. So getting back to it, Din has his confrontation with Moff Gideon. And it's cool. Moff Gideon's riding with his own personal Praetorian guard. Mm-hmm. And Din gets overwhelmed pretty quickly. He cannot handle both suited up Gideon and the three Praetorian guards. This was a pretty cool moment where Grogu gets separated by the Praetorian Guard and kind of, you know, Mando loses line of sight on him. And he's just like, oh, shit, I literally cannot bail him out of this one. he has to save himself and I have to let him go. That was, that felt like a good moment for me.
It was rough watching Mando try and run after him and Moff Gideon just using the Mandalorian gadgets, basically the rope in the wrist and caught him by the neck. It's devastating because you could tell that Mando was absolutely like so terrified that Grogu, who's new to all these missions, is going to have to fight three expert fighters who almost just kicked his ass, you know.
Killed Paz, pretty much. Well, Paz was, you know, at the end of his rope without his weapons. But anyway, yeah. I mean, they're still strong as fuck. I was freaking out. I was like, you better not touch Grogu, because I was getting flashbacks of season one where, like, those stormtroopers, I don't know if they were called stormtroopers specifically, just had him in the bag.
Yeah.
Just,
oh, my gosh.
And slapped him. I was like, Grogu better not get hit again.
I would go Super Saiyan immediately. Yeah.
But as soon as, you know, they were actually, the four of them were in the room fighting, the Praetorian guards were swinging up at Grogu, like dancing on the lights, I was like, he's not in trouble. He's laughing. He's having fun.
Once we got the confirmed laugh from the closed captioning, I was like, all right, I don't have anything to worry about. He's just having fun here.
Okay, so we flash back to Bo-Katan in the air, who sees Mando trying to go toe-to-toe with Gideon, and she's like, let me just swoop down. She's like, yo, Mando, it's got to be me. You know, I got the Darksaber now. I got an image to uphold. If someone's going to take on the big bad, it's me. You go help the kid. So now we have Bo-Katan first, Moff Gideon, and in the other room, Mando / Din goes to help Grogu. Mm-hmm. Both pretty cool fights. Mm-hmm. Question mark? I don't know. What do you guys think?
I thought the Bo-Katan fight, I thought, was really well done, honestly. I mean, I had no issues with it. I still think Moff Gideon's suit is like one of the sexiest pieces of armor anyone could get in the Star Wars universe. So I loved seeing that. And he was a fucking badass, man. I mean, he was overpowering her constantly in the beginning, at least before she kind of like kicked into that third gear a little bit. I was really happy with their fight, at least particularly. I mean, Bo-Katan was getting her ass handed to her. She kind of just let her body take, like, she let the Darksaber kind of take control, it felt like, of her, and just let it flow a little bit more fluidly, and she was able to get the upper hand. I was genuinely happy with that fight in particular.
Well, I kind of had the same feelings in the beginning. I'm like, all right, Bo's been waiting to unleash here. Let's fucking go. And then she kind of, you know, get beat down a little bit. And I was a little upset, but that was more, I guess, just showing how good the Empire's technology was, how good that shit was. I mean, every time he threw a punch, they did have that mechanical sound in the background. So it wasn't just like armor. It was like a mecha suit around
and
him.
I think she kind of came in a little bit hot, too, because he was riling her up a little bit with the comments of, you know, are you here to surrender or fight? Probably surrender kind of stuff, you know. So I think she was feeling all the angers that she all the emotions that she had been feeling in the past kind of rushed in, wasn't really thinking too much in the early stages of the fight. And that's why Moff Gideon was able to kind of overtake her for a second there.
The lesson is nice, but I cringed a little bit when she said Mandos are stronger together when Din and Grogu rejoin the fight. I was like, that one's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Gotta say it.
Power of friendship.
Yeah, it felt very power of friendship type of thing. But yeah, then things move pretty quickly. You know, Grogu's pushing his whatever you call it. He had one of those electric staffs away. They're just saucing him up real good. 3v1, he stands no chance. Axe is overhead, bails out of the cruiser right before it hits the city, and flamey blow-ups. Another ambiguous exit from Moff Gideon. No body, no death.
I gotta think
he's in the dopest armor.
I wanna say he's alive, but I think he's done.
I think what emphasizes his death is the fact that Grogu went out of his way to use the Force to shield them, because if he had just let them if they had all just suffered the same fate as Gideon, then, you know, like, maybe then I would believe that he was alive. But Grogu went out of his way to force shield the explosion, thinking that it would kill all of them. So I'm just going to have to assume Moff Gideon's dead. But those thoughts did cross my mind. Question mark. Is this a to be continued with Moff Gideon? But no, I think he's done for.
Yeah, there's a part that's like, show us the body. And then it's like the other, well, his body's fucking disintegrated, so he can't really show it. At first, I didn't think the explosion was going to reach Grogu, Din, and Bo. I thought it was just going to take out Moff like 20 feet in front of them, and I was pissed. And then they showed Grogu, thank God. And it was really cool. You know, the force field, it is pretty sick, and it is like a crazy sense of wonderment. You know, you could see the shock on Bo's face and everything.
Sure. With
it was a good moment.
Now that I'm hearing a lot of these like complaints from the community and things, do you guys have any issues with Bo-Katan not being the final blow to Moff Gideon? Like, do you think it's kind of lame that he was just engulfed in flames rather than finished by Bo-Katan? I personally, just really quickly, I would say I found this ending to be fine. I didn't really have the expectation, I guess, that Bo or Din, maybe I did, but I'm still fine with it because it still kind of ties in together with what she said, the cheesy line about how Mandalorians are stronger together. But
that is something people brought up, like they could have cashed in and had him stabbed with the Darksaber, and that probably would have been satisfying. We neglected to mention that Gideon crushed the Darksaber, which people
forgot about that. Yeah.
Three seasons of just showcasing how important it is, even though this season they kind of took a step back on that and focused more on how the idea of it is important, not the literal sense of ownership of it. I was pretty disappointed that they chose to crush it. I thought that was something that didn't have to happen for us to understand that, okay, it has lost its importance. They didn't have to physically destroy it.
Mm-hmm. I was pretty pissed off about that, especially because, you know, you're saying it kind of destroys three seasons of work to go farther than that. If you watch, like, you know, Rebels and Clone Wars, like even all of that, the Darksaber. So like that's you don't want to say, you know, pointless now, but it the meaning definitely, when you know the Darksaber is just going to be destroyed in the end, you know, it takes away from the whole journey and all the sacrifices made to get it. So I was a little upset. Like you were saying, they made the point, oh, the Darksaber, you know, doesn't mean you need to lead. That's the old ways. It's all about honor now. Doesn't mean you need to destroy it. You can still have it. It's iconic and like such a cool idea. So I was definitely upset that they crushed it.
I didn't have any of those thoughts until now. Like, I completely agree. Like, honestly, you're right. You're absolutely right. Like, you build up this weapon to be the main importance of your culture, almost like you follow whoever has the Darksaber. My one thing is, I guess I don't have a complete complaint of it getting destroyed. I do think it is corny with everything that you guys are saying, that like, oh, like, you know, it's not who is the wielder of the Darksaber, it's, you know, whoever's the most honorable person. Like, I think that's cheesy, definitely. But to me, I think there's still an opportunity. Maybe I'm just like being an optimistic here, but I think there's still an opportunity for them to maybe potentially reforge the Darksaber.
I was just thinking, Grogu still needs a saber of his own. Maybe like they fractured the Kyber crystal. I'm not sure.
Okay.
That would now make I'm like fucking a shorter blade or something like that. So now this is all dependent on them using this storyline and doing something cool with it.
Absolutely.
But as of right now, until proven otherwise, I'm pretty thumbs down on the decision to destroy the Darksaber.
Agreed. Until they either choose to replace it or reforge it, I'm going to be under the impression that that was a bad decision for them to destroy it if they completely wipe out that storyline, which I hope they don't. I don't think they will. That's the only thing making me happy that it was destroyed, is this potential outcome of a new Darksaber coming out. We'll have to just wait and see, though.
Okay, how about this? When you just said reforged, that just triggered something. It was Paz Vizsla's ancestor, the Jedi Mandalorian, that forged it. So what if they do save the Kyber crystal somehow, and his descendant,
the kid,
I forget his name.
Yeah, dude,
what if he...
Ragnar,
what if he reforges the Darksaber in like a year or two? Or a few years, I guess, when he's older and learns how to do that shit. That would be kind of cool.
It's possible.
If they did show the reforging. I was just going to go back, because when we were talking about, you know, how did you feel about the Moff Gideon end? If I had to write my perfect script, I would have had Bo-Katan do the last shot, and I would have had her do what Moff did to her, where she would have had to beat him, made him surrender, he would have like crumbled and surrendered and said mercy. And she's like, all right, well, I'm going to pull you and not actually let you surrender. And I'm still going to destroy you and then kill him. That would have been like sick.
They took the Disney route.
Well, and I don't want to slam them too hard because they showed her using the Darksaber in the midair combat. Like she was going in, yeah. They showed one or two stabbings. So they weren't full on Disney. I would have liked to, like you said, something a little bit more ruthless like that. Yeah, it felt quick. It was ambiguous. He got engulfed by flames. Again, just one of those things that the community is potentially complaining about. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Whatever.
I think what you said is perfect. It's like instead of it being a 9, it's just now an 8. Like it was it was still a good ending, just not maybe what it could have been.
Yeah, for sure. So speaking of Ragnar, he is once again having to take the code, which someone pointed out was weird. They didn't say why. Ragnar once again had to swear to the code when he did it in episode 1.
Well, he didn't finish it, right? Didn't it got interrupted? It got interrupted technically, mm-hmm. So it didn't get fully finished.
Okay.
And plus, now he's bathing in the actual waters. Now, come on, I mean, you got to be the
this
he's
going to be the first. Okay.
Yeah, this is true, and this is the way.
But yeah, so after he takes the code or swears to the creed, Din brings Grogu in, and events transpire whereby he officially adopts Grogu. And we also learned that unlike any other Mandalorian, Din is Din Djarin's family name, whereas everybody else, such as Vizsla, such as Sabine Wren, such as Bo-Katan Kryze, it is the actual second name is your last name. But for some reason, Grogu takes Din instead of Djarin. Like, shouldn't Love he it. Be Grogu Djarin? Din Grogu sounds way better, but technically it should be Grogu Djarin, like, which is just another one of those things where it seems like every other Mandalorian has that naming convention. Why is it the opposite for these two?
Yeah, they're special. That's why. But this was a great moment, man. I mean, Grogu is happy. Our boy Daddy Pedro is standing up for Grogu because the armorer says, you know, he's too young. He can't recite the creed, but he's Mando knows that he's well over like 50 years old and is like, you know, if he's my son, can we do this? And she's like, this is the way. And I love this because I don't know if this was a director choice or what, but we actually have Grogu babbling. So he's no longer cooing. He's babbling. And that okay. like, because to me that, you know, feels like he's trying to formulate sentences a little bit better. Maybe he was trying to recite the creed here a little bit. He was trying to show his dedication to the creed in the Mandalorian way. But what a phenomenal moment for Grogu. He really is a little bit of everything. He's got a little bit of droid in him. He's got a little bit of Jedi, a little bit of Mando in him. Dude, where this guy's going to be a beast when he's like actually capable of like talking and being wise.
Yeah. I wonder if we'll ever get him fully talking and making sentences, or if
not in like any of these shows. I think like if there's a Star Wars show like way down the line, it'd be about Grogu.
Well, I mean, the newest trilogy is about 25-30 years in the future, I think. Mm-hmm. Assumedly Grogu makes it mm-hmm. past then, and I'm sure they're planning on coming out with content that takes place after those movies still. So at that point, maybe Grogu could at least be talking.
Yeah.
Which is something that's a cool thought.
Yeah.
One, I really like how they refer to whatever as the song. Din's like, he's not a foundling anymore. Add him to the song. And then the official induction is let it be written in song that Din Djarin is accepting this foundling as his son. You are now Din Grogu, Mandalorian apprentice. You must leave Mandalore and take your apprentice on his journey, just as your teacher did for you, which... Do we know who his teacher was?
No, that was huge.
Yeah.
I was taking all of this as like parent stuff. Like season 4 is going to be going into potentially locating Grogu's parents, potentially going into Din's backstory with his master. Like that's what I was taking. 100%. That's where I took it as.
And I think that would be a huge revelation to why hit the naming convention is Din, and Din is like the family name, like the clan name.
Yeah, then we can get into that. Yeah.
If we show his teacher, his apprentice, and his teacher was somebody who wasn't, you know, like him, like Grogu isn't a Mandalorian,
yeah,
but he's still Din's son. Maybe fucking Din was like a hut, was his teacher, and it was a big old fat hut of Mandalorian that taught him everything.
Put it on the board, it's a theory.
Can you imagine a hut in Beskar armor? How much fucking armor that would take?
Be worth a fortune.
Yeah, so seriously. That actually, talking about that, I didn't think about that, but that really gets me excited to kind of, maybe we'll get some revelations about his mentor.
And Dave, I was thinking the same way. I was thinking they could explore Yoda's parents, because
same species.
What does the armorer specifically say? Because Mando asks, what if his parents gave permission? And she's like, we don't know his parents, and they're probably in some faraway distant planet, which felt like foreshadowing. Like, oh, yeah, we could totally go looking for that faraway distant planet in season 4.
Totally.
So that would be really, really cool. And was one of the things people were like, oh, it didn't really set up the next season. I'm like, they left it very open-ended so they could do whatever the hell they want. Like, now they're just contractors for hire. Like, Mandalore is going to be up and running. I'm sure, like, they're going to go on an adventure, and then we'll be able to see, like, Mandalore after 5 years of rebuilding. Oh, let's check in on Bo-Katan, help with the efforts. Maybe they got a mission for us. I think season 4 could be awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it could be Thrawn as, like, the big bad in season 4, but, like, as I'm taking this right now, is we don't have a villain for season 4, and it could be all just focus on, you know, like we were talking about, Grogu, Din, their backstories, where they came from. Get the audience back hype. If we want to include Yoda, you can absolutely do that. If season 2's Luke reveal was such a big success, why not include Yoda somehow if they're the same species? Like, this can all be...
Yoda's dead, bro.
Yeah, true, but...
So, Force Ghost.
Yeah, Force Ghost, exactly. There's always hope, but, you know, I think we have at least some line of sight, and they can kick it for right now if they want to. Just let Grogu, give him time to speak, and then once he's able to talk, let's go find your fucking parents, man. Let's do it.
So, yeah, in another scene, we have the official relighting of the Great Forge of Mandalore. I thought it
use
was...
Use it to forge the new Darksaber. That's what I'm saying.
Hey, I'm in. I thought it was a little bit of a cheesy scene, but I also looked at my roommate and I was like, of course that's what they would do instead of clapping, is just clanging their gauntlets.
Beskar,
it just sounds so perfect, like Paul said. Such a West great Ham fans. Noise.
They're a bunch of West Ham fans throwing up
making
the
hammers. Yeah. Dude, they totally would be West Ham fans, not gonna lie.
Oh, yeah. I thought this was cool. Just watching the forge get lit and then kind of like exploding with the flame and then going back down to the concentrated little like blue. Oh, God. It's so cool.
So that brings us to the next scene where we go back to Adelphi Station and Din and Grogu have a run in. Not a run in. They go to talk to Captain Teva. This was a pretty cool scene. Again, setting up what season 4 might look like. They essentially they tell him that they're going to start being independent contractors for the New Republic. His motive for that is, I'm a bounty hunter by trade, but now that I have the kid with me, I don't want to collect bounties. I want to do good things instead. Yeah. So that makes sense. I love Captain Teva, so I'm glad that connection's gonna keep going. And I thought this was actually a great way to get like the IG-11 part back. Just, it was one of the heads at the bar or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I really liked this scene.
Yeah, Captain Teva, GOAT. We love him here on the podcast. It was great seeing him. I always just love when Mando just goes back to old friends, like whether it's Grief or Teva or whoever, you know, it's just always such a great reunion. And, you know, Teva's joking around with him. He's like, oh, you're going to, you know, you're joining the New Republic. He's like, well, I didn't say that necessarily. I'll be an independent contractor. But they just have such a great rapport that's just so genuine. And I just know that they're going to do great things together. And it's such a good resource for Mando to have someone who's that deep in the New Republic who can inform him of what's potentially going on in the Outer Rim.
Yeah, I think just such a clutch relationship going forward. It's just going to be so cool seeing like the different conversations and missions that he's sending him on. So just really cool.
Win-win right there. I also still love the orange jumpsuits. Just brings me back to the old trilogy. though, Dave, like you said, the only person we didn't see is Pelimato, because the next scene we do go to Navarro, back to Grief. And just another feel-good moment. Grief once again thanks Mando for his work and what he's done for the planet, and Mando takes him up on his offer of getting a cottage just outside of town. But Mando also has a gift for Grief, and that is a newly refurbished IG-11 who can act as the town's marshal. So another win-win. Yep. This whole episode was just tied up very nicely, and it was very heartwarming, and it was very feel good. I don't know. Do you guys feel good?
Oh, I felt amazing. I felt amazing afterwards. Just love ending on a happy, positive note where our boys can just relax and hang out and not have anything to worry about. So a good ending in the sense that it was very positive for everyone. And then also they gave us enough to potentially set us up for season four. Now, if they've actually followed through with where we think they're going to go with season four, that's another thing. But as of right now, I think we've got great content. I thought it was a great wrap up to what was a hot take, apparently, of a great season. So I really love this show. I really do.
Yeah, everything was definitely cleaned up nice and tidy, and there's no loose ends. I feel like the only loose end is Moff's undercover agent. I forget her name.
Oh, yeah, true. It's
escaping me. That's kind of like one of the last loose ends because we didn't see her. She's just still in the New Republic, I believe.
Was it
Elia?
Elia?
Elia, yeah. I was looking for the name.
Gotcha. Yeah,
she's definitely going to be a problem, actually. Now, I was saying earlier that there weren't any villains left. Scratch that. She is certainly up there.
But I don't even know where she would go because, like, Moff was, like, the only one that really knew about her. Well, so, unless she goes to the Shadow Council.
She hadn't been made yet, and she may be savvy enough to get in contact with the rest of the Shadow Council. So I think that's definitely a loose end that needs addressing next season, but she's still around and, you know. Mm-hmm.
Also, IG-11 as a marshal scares the fuck out of me. Because his eyes are like hit the fucking barrels of his laser blaster. So when he looks at you, he's literally pointing a gun at you. And I'm like, that would make me so uncomfortable as a civilian.
I was kind of thinking the same thing. It's like you have this like clearly armed to the fucking T weapon, piece of weaponry just running around as your marshal, and everyone's just like clapping. It's like that would just never fly.
I mean, they're used to having droids around. So, yeah, true. You know, different galaxy, different culture.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, the last scene of the episode is Grogu and Din just kicking back, relaxing at their cabin. Grogu's playing with a frog, and the vibes are immaculate. I'm not going to lie. I like that they could just chill here.
We had that classic like Star Wars clothes, like the traditional like 80s, 90s, like, yeah, zoom in with the circle.
Yeah, the circle.
I guess the only thing we really didn't talk that much more about was the Mythosaur eye when they were rekindling the fire. We saw a little quick shot of it kind of sleeping and then its eye awoke. So, really all I have to say about that is just I hope we actually see a Mythosaur in action for once in season four. Like, I hope it's just not gonna just chill down there.
Agreed.
Yeah, it'll be cool to see him if he actually, the Mythosaur, does anything. If he like poops out Beskar and that's how they actually get the
That's where Beskar comes from.
Yeah, like something like that. But yeah, the last scene, everybody was happy. I was like, dude, this could be the end of the Mandalorian, and I'd be fine with it. I mean, this is great.
Yeah, I actually surprisingly thought this was like the series finale going into the season. But I think B. Tom said there might, I think there's going to be one more season. But I thought this, like, if, going into this thinking this was the series finale, if this episode was the series finale, I think it ended on an absolutely high point. I think it's perfect.
Yeah, this seemed like a natural ending. And if I'm pretty sure there are more seasons coming. At the very least, I think it's going to be like a hard reset. Next season's going to look very different. You know, Moff Gideon, we all really feel confident that he did die. So he's not going to be looming overhead. Probably Thrawn will be more prevalent. So there's a lot to look forward to. Dave liked season three. I think people liked season three. Maybe, like Paul said, they're a victim of their own success a little bit. Season three was good. It was good. There were a lot of good moments. Any lasting thoughts, gentlemen?
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way. I once again want to apologize for the delay on getting this episode out. And that is going to be a wrap on our season 3 Mandalorian coverage. As always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on bingetowntv.com. Subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
Sixers win. This is the way. Let's go.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.